Good evening. I'm glad to be back and have another hour to worship and open up God's Word with you tonight. We talked this morning about lack of holiness in this world and how that affects the way we see meaning and perceive the purpose of our life, how the world even recognizes it, even if they can't put the word holiness to it and understand that there is at least an intuition that things are polluted, that things are off. And then we talked a little bit about how holiness is tied to meaning, and not just individually, but generally in the world as it stands. And so I want us to continue to think a little bit in those terms tonight as we think about the purpose of, as we think of holiness in regards to meaning. I don't think my clicker is working. I have a couple of... There we go, let's see. I accidentally brought the clicker from my congregation with me, and it's exactly the same as y'all's. And so, well, all right, having a little issues on that. If it matters, it's not on the screen up here, so I don't know if that affects anything to be done back there. But let's think about a couple things as we start then and do a little thing to help us appreciate the way holiness works. We talked about how holiness involves multiple meanings. That when God does something, it's not just, okay, here's the answer, but there are actually layers on top of layers of answers and layers of meaning. So we use the example of maybe a quilt. Grandmother's quilt is more meaningful to me. And if we continue thinking along those terms, I think one of the best illustrations we could use that would demonstrate that some things are more meaningful and more important to us is very simply, just imagine that your home is on fire. If your home is on fire, what do you save first? Well, if my home is on fire, I'm going to save my dog first, because he's a living being, and he is more important to me. It's more important to save life than it is to save material. And so, in that sense, my grandmother's quilt still is important to me, but it's not as important as the life of my dog. If we have families, then obviously our family, our wife, our children, our siblings, whatever it may be, that's the first thing you go in to save. When your house is on fire, you don't go in and say, oh no, I need to make sure that I save those plastic cups, because we have a potluck next week. That would be inappropriate. That would be... that would show a lack of discernment. And so we prioritize, we organize things that are meaningful to us, and we do this really without having to think about it. It's just part of, this is just what humans do. They organize, they prioritize. So whether you've sat down and made lists and prioritized things, it's really irrelevant to the fact that you've done it at one point or another in some intuitive way or another. There we go. Thank you, gentlemen. And so when we don't want to lose something that's meaningful, we naturally try to preserve it, and we preserve it in a hierarchy, in an order. And so the more meaningful it is, the more I want to protect it. And we see this idea of levels of holiness, that there is a hierarchy, that there is an order. We see that in the Bible. And we're not going to be reading a lot of the scriptures that have to deal with some of these examples, because it would take a long time and because it'd be a little tedious. So we're going to be dealing initially with some things that are from the Bible, and I encourage you to go read in the book of Numbers, in the book of Exodus, some of these things we're talking about, and kind of go through them and see for yourself. But a lot of this for Christians, we are educated in this. I know many of us are educated in this. And if you're not, then I encourage you to go and look. It's not terribly complex, but it is something that helps us to think about holiness. And this idea is seen, first of all, in the tabernacle. We talk about some things being more important, more holy than others, then the tabernacle is our guide. And it's really made not just to be a guide about some random tent that God made, but it is meant to show us that the world itself is supposed to be organized the way that God shows us in the tabernacle. And the easiest way to illustrate this is that there is one room in the tabernacle called the holy place, and there is another room in the tabernacle called the most holy place. And that very simple fact tells us that something is more important than the other. That yes, okay, the holy place, we're not going to say that's not important, but the most holy place is clearly and obviously more important. And therefore, what would we expect? That it carries more meaning. That it needs even more protection, needs to be even more pure than the holy place. If all holy things were of equal weight, of equal value, then God would not have named the most holy place the most holy place. He would have said, you know, holy place here, holy place there, holy place there. But He graded them. He gave them certain levels. And so as we talked about this morning, we have to start with God as the holiest of all things in existence. We start with Him as the most meaningful, most sacred thing being in existence. And we work our way outwards from there. And that's exactly what we see from the tabernacle. That we start with God. What is in the most holy place? Why is that so holy? Because that's where God comes down, where heaven meets earth, where God dwells among His people. So we see God there in the center. And then the Holy of Holies is connected directly to that. And then we have, well, that's not exactly where we're going with that, but you go out from the Holy of Holies, and there is the holy place. And just imagine that there are circles around the holy place, the Holy of Holies, and there's a holy place there. And then you go out from there, and there is the courtyard. And then you go out from there, and there is Israel. And then you go out from Israel, and there are the nations around them. And so you start in the center with God as the most meaningful, most holy thing, and you gradually work your way out. And it's as if, and it is like a light, that the farther it goes, the more it fades. That's how meaning works as well. The closer you are to God, the more bright it is, the more meaningful it is. The farther you get away, the less meaningful it becomes. That doesn't mean that it becomes meaningless. It just means that it is not as important in the scheme of things. We have these, when we look at what's in the Holy of Holies, you see the tabernacle that is placed there. And what is placed, you see the Ark of the Covenant, excuse me, the Ark of the Covenant that is placed there. And what is the Ark of the Covenant but one of the most holy objects in existence in all of Israel? And the Ark of the Covenant contains within it some very meaningful, very important, very sacred things. It contains the Ten Commandments. And we could go through, you know, each of the objects and talk about it, but we'll just talk about the Ten Commandments and how jam-packed full of meaning the Ten Commandments are for just a second. You remember in Matthew chapter 22 and verse 37 that Jesus says, when asked what are the greatest commandments, He says, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the great and first commandment. And a second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend all the law and prophets." So even Jesus Himself says there's one that I can say is the greatest. You know, I think if someone were to ask us this question and we hadn't heard Jesus give this answer, say, "What's the most important law?" We would say, "Ah, that's a trick question. They're all just as important." Everything that God says is important, and so you're not going to fool me by trying to make me say one's more important than the other. Everything came from the mouth of God. That's not what Jesus says. Of course, they are all important because they come from the mouth of God, but they are not all of equal weight. Jesus says there actually is one that is the most important, and that is that you love God with all your heart, soul, and mind. And then there's another one that's right up there with it. Is love your neighbor. And those two, if you will recall, are really just a summary of the Ten Commandments. You take the first four of the Ten Commandments and they're talking about relationship with God, and you take the last six and they're talking about the relationship that we have with each other. And so we have this general division of the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments represent God's relationship to His people. That is one of the most sacred, if not wouldn't be wrong to say that's the most sacred thing that exists in this creation is our relationship to God. God puts His emphasis and His He puts the emphasis on that by taking those Ten Commandments, putting them in the Ark of the Covenant, and putting it in the Holy of Holies. And so again, we have something that is full of meaning, multiple meanings, and we could do a whole sermon about the Ten Commandments. We could do a whole sermon about the Holy of Holies and the different aspects and meanings that are involved in that. But I think we can appreciate just by seeing what the Ten Commandments have within them, we can appreciate that they are extremely meaningful and that they actually carry more meaning than some other things that God has put. Is it important that God has the utensils that are supposed to serve the tabernacle? Yes, those are important. But if you have a choice to save the utensils that are going to serve in making sacrifices and so forth, if you have a choice between saving the utensils and saving the Ten Commandments, you save the Ten Commandments. They're more important. And so, now I can come back and look at these. You see how God has shown us through the organization of His tabernacle how things are supposed to be weighted, how things radiate from God being at the center, and how things go out from there. We move outward from God. The closer we get to God, the more important things become, the more meaningful things become. As we talked about this morning, He is the center of all meaning. And so again, does that mean that the altar is unimportant? Does that mean that the courtyard is unimportant and you can just go defile that and it's no big deal? No. To say that one thing is more important doesn't make the other things not important. And so we have to appreciate that. And so in that sense, yes, everything God says needs to be treated as holy and sacred and important. But there are some things that are different in their prioritization. And the people of Israel had different levels of holiness required of them. Just as the physical objects in this courtyard and the tabernacle, they have different levels going out from the Holy of Holies, so did the roles that the people had as well. You can do the same thing and talk about God and His relationship to the high priest. High priest is the only one that gets to go in and see God, and he only gets to do it once a year. But he's the only one that gets to do it. The high priest is the one that is closest to God. This is a very important position. And then you move out to the priests, move out from there to the Levites. They are set apart people. Remember, they are representative. If you go to Numbers, they're representative of the firstborn that God passed over from Egypt. God, instead of taking the Israelites' firstborn, He took the Levites. And so they are special. They are holy and set apart for Him. They have this special role. And it's a role that is more meaningful than the roles of your average Israelite, because it deals with God. And so, we move out from the Levites, and we do see the Israelites, and again, move out from the Israelites, and we have the nations, the Gentiles. And that's how it works. That's what it's supposed to look like. And so you can see, hopefully, based on these biblical patterns, the way our view of the world is supposed to work. How we're supposed to see things and how we're supposed to order things. It starts with God at the center, and then we start seeing what God has said is important, and we start saying those things are important as well. We're familiar with grades in school. You get, you know, A, B, C, D, and you see a sign like this coming up on the road. It's a little steep grade ahead. It's talking about something like that. That's the same type of sign saying that there is a grade. Something's going down. There's a slope that's happening. And that's kind of how we base our idea of grades in school. You have, I've put them in reverse order here as far as from right to left, but they are in the right order as far as from the most important at the top to the lowest at the bottom. The highest grade is the A, and you move down, and F is really almost meant to be, you know, its own thing. It doesn't even go to E, because F doesn't stand for the letter F. It stands for fail. Your grade is so low, it really doesn't matter beyond that point. But nevertheless, we use that idea, and we say, no, that an A is something that is of more value than a B. And a B is of more value than a C. And that's how we have, you get your GPA. You start assigning different values to one class that has, 3 hours here and it's an A. One class over here has 3 hours and it's a B, and you give them their weights and do all the math and you come up with your weighted GPA. Because there are different weights, there are different grades and levels assigned to those things. I suggest to you that that's how holiness works as well. There are different grades of holiness. There are different levels and different weights of holiness, of objects and the holiness that these objects have. And so, you could see, just for example, what we just talked about, the same type of thing, just in a different format. That God is at the top. He is the highest grade that carries the highest weight. The high priest, the Levites, the Israelites, the Gentiles, you go down from there. And so, that's the picture that we see in the Bible. That there are different weights and different grades given to different things. And the problem for us and what's important for us is not just to recognize this, but when we start thinking about holiness, and we would say, I want to be holy. I want to be holy means that we want to give the right weights to the right things. If we just say, I want to be holy, then it may be holiness on our own terms and on our own scale. Pharisees certainly illustrated this. They had a grading system of their own. And the problem is that sometimes our grading system doesn't match God's grading system. And what gets confusing is that we're talking about things that are in the Bible, just like God talks about things in the Bible, but maybe we have put things in the wrong place. And so our desire to be holy in one area, if it is weighted improperly, will actually not help us become any more holy, because we're seeking a holiness that is based on the wrong scale. And so we have to first appreciate and understand that, if we're going to even start being holy. We turn to Matthew chapter 23 and verse 23. And you see what happens when our code doesn't match God's code. Matthew chapter 23, verse 23. This is a familiar passage, I believe, as well. Jesus, speaking to the Pharisees, says, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For you tithe mint and dill and cumin and have neglected the weightier matters of the law. Justice and mercy and faithfulness. These you ought to have done without neglecting the others." You know what Jesus does not say? He does not say that you should never have been concerned about the way you tithe. He doesn't say I can't believe that you were concerned about that. How could anyone look at that and be so upset and concerned about tithing the right way? God, Jesus does not say that their problem was that they were tithing, or even that they were counting their tithe and being very, very careful about it. No, the problem was they put the wrong weight on the wrong thing. They had things backwards. They had things disorganized. Because I can assure you, a Pharisee, if you ask him, is going to tell you that holiness matters to him. And that he is trying to be holy, and that's exactly what he's trying to do in all of the Pharisees are trying to do in Israel, is to make Israel holy. That's their whole goal. Jesus doesn't dispute that they want to be holy. He disputes that they are being holy with things the way God tells them they need to be holy. He clearly says, you've placed too much emphasis on those things. You've made those at the highest level. You've given those the A grade, so to speak, and you have taken things like justice and mercy and faithfulness, and you've put them down here in the D level. And that's not the way God has organized things. That's not the hierarchy God gave to it. I would suggest that's really important for us to think about as we are talking about holiness amongst one another and encouraging one another to be the Christians we ought to be. We can be just as guilty as the Pharisees of putting the wrong weight on the wrong things. Maybe we could put, is it possible? We could put more emphasis on showing up to services than we put on helping those who are in need or being kind to your brother. Is it possible that because that's visual, we say, oh, that's important. And God says, you know, you go to Hebrews and he talks about the need to assemble and that's really important. Well, I'm not saying it's unimportant, but are we giving it the weight that it belongs to? And it's not so much that we emphasize that. That's not a problem. The problem is if we're emphasizing that and not emphasizing even more the kindness and the love and the relationship that we are supposed to have with our brethren. We could say and go to Scripture and say, oh, God says, don't neglect the assembling of the saints. Well, of course, that's true. But there are some things, don't you think, that get a higher grade. And I realize that might not be the best example to start a gospel meeting, talking about how there are things more important than attendance. But the fact is, that's the case. Jesus tells the Pharisees that these things you ought to have done without neglecting the others. So when we, again, just to emphasize, when we say that something is more important, we're not saying that the other things are unimportant. We're saying they need to be put in their place. And so, we need to make sure that our grading system is lining up with God's grading system. Jesus says there are some things that are more important. He says there are two greatest commandments. He says there are weightier matters of the law. And I'm afraid that sometimes it's just easy for us to make that blanket statement, just to say that anything is just as important as something else. And someone that is doing something over here that's maybe not right is just as bad and just as unholy as this person over here. It's not an excuse for doing anything that is unholy, but it is an important distinction that we need to make sure we're making, because I'll tell you, especially with our young people, if we're giving them the impression that the things that we have decided are weightier are more weighty than what God has shown, then they're going to recognize that there's something off, that there's something wrong with the emphasis and the weight that is put on this and not the emphasis and the weight that is put on that. They're going to recognize that. They're going to see that there are people who maybe put that weight in the right place where we don't. But everyone has a grading system. Everyone has a scale for holiness. And we do it again, as we started talking about, without really even having to think and be conscious of it. It's just part of what we do. And holiness and these grades and levels of holiness pervades all things. And it's really a lifetime effort to start figuring out how to put things in their right place and how to see things the way God sees them. That's something that will never end. That's part of becoming sanctified and being holy. And we'll talk about that a little more explicitly later this week. But it's important that we start to see things the right way. But there are physical things that carry more importance. There are relationships that are supposed to carry more importance in our lives. The relationship of a husband and wife is supposed to carry more weight than the relationship of me and my friend. There's nothing wrong with that. That's simply how it's supposed to work. You can do the same thing with time. There is holy time. We talked about the Sabbath this morning, that there are times that God has set aside, and I want you to take this block of time and treat it as sacred because it has all this meaning built into it. But we do that even outside of the Bible. Football season's coming up. How many of you think that an hour is the same on Friday at 2 o'clock as it is on Saturday at 3:30? I bet you that there are many of us here who would say, actually, I think Saturday at 3:30, that's a weightier hour. That's an hour that I want to keep sacred. Or maybe a weightier 3 hours. I'm going to take that time, I'm going to set it aside because why? Because it's meaningful to me. For whatever reason you may think it's meaningful, I've decided that this time, it needs to be holy, it needs to be pure and set apart. And that if people are going to mess with that time, then they're going to mess with the meaning and purpose I have for this time in my life. The fulfillment that I get in my life has now been lessened because someone has intruded themselves on something that I have considered holy and have given a higher weight to in time. How many of us could say the same thing about when we assemble together? That is time that we think is valuable, that is meaningful to our lives, that if that time is violated, then somehow our life is missing something in that moment. Our time is something that we give weight to. It is something that is sacred to us, and we need to not give the same weight to the same to every block of time. Our grading system, again, needs to match up with God's grading system. And so what God has done through Jesus, by bringing Jesus to this world, is he's shown us that the things that we tend to deem most valuable in this life have received the wrong grades. And that's part of what it means to be blind and lost, is to see that there is meaning in this world, to try to preserve it, but because we can't see its proper weights and its proper priorities, we cling to things that are upside down. Our scale is flipped. When Jesus came, everything looked backwards. Power looked like powerlessness. Glory looked like ingloriousness. God says, here is what glory looks like to me, here's what power looks like to me, and it was Jesus on a cross, weak and helpless. That is a complete reversal of ideas, and that is what needs to happen with our concept of what is holy and what is not, with what gets the proper weight and what doesn't. 2 Corinthians chapter 5. 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 16. 2 Corinthians 5 verse 16 says, therefore, from now on, we recognize no one according to the flesh. Even though we have known Christ according to the flesh, yet now we know him in this way no longer. Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, he is a new creature. The old things have passed away. Behold, new things have come. You recognize what he's saying there. We recognize no one according to the flesh. What does that mean? you know, I was baptized and now I can't recognize everyone. I came up out of the waters and I used to know all these people and now I need to go back to the directory and rememorize everyone's faces. Now, when he says we don't recognize anyone according to the flesh, he's saying that our perception of the world has changed. Our evaluation system has been reversed. We're giving different points to different things. And so we don't evaluate people according to the fleshly fallen way of evaluating things. We now evaluate people in the new world order that God has shown to us through Christ. We learn how to give the right weight to the right things. And we learn how to preserve those things in holiness. We learn to call sacred what God calls sacred. And aligning our grades of holiness with God's grades, that is the path to meaning in our lives, the path to a meaningful world, and that is the path to wisdom. And it is the way we gain wisdom. We start by treating God holy. We put that in its place, and it helps us to see the world as it truly is. It helps us to see the world the way God sees it. When we start to see the world the way God sees it, then we become wiser. Because wisdom is all about seeing things. Wisdom is all about appreciating the nuance and the different weights between different things. Holiness needs to start by putting God in his place, and it needs to be defined as God defines it, not as we defined it, lest we become like the Pharisees. Turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 2. This won't be up on your screen. 1 Corinthians 2. 1 Corinthians chapter 2, you see, again, this reversal of how we look at things. He says in verse 14, a natural man does not accept the things of the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness to him, and he cannot understand them because they are spiritually appraised. But he who is spiritual appraises all things, yet he himself is appraised by no one. For who has known the mind of the Lord that he will instruct him? But we have the mind of Christ. We have been given the mind of Christ. We can see things and spiritually appraise things in a way that we could never do before. We can give the right weight to the right things because Jesus has shown us what that looks like. He's shown us what a well-ordered humanity is supposed to be. We'll close our time tonight with Mark chapter 5. Turn to Mark chapter 5. But we're trying to be fully developed, pure, holy people. That's what we come to Christ for. And that's what a problem that we see in Mark chapter 5, beginning in verse 1. Jesus and the Pharisees, they came to the other side of the sea, into the country of the Gerasenes. When he got out of the boat, immediately a man from the tombs with an unclean spirit met him. And he had his dwelling among the tombs, and no one was able to bind him anymore, even with a chain, because he had often been bound with shackles and chains, and the chains had been torn apart by him, and the shackles broken in pieces, and no one was strong enough to subdue him. Constantly, night and day, he was screaming among the tombs and in the mountains and gashing himself with stones. And seeing Jesus from a distance, he ran up and bowed down before him, and shouting with a loud voice, he said, what business do we have to do with each other, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I implore you, by God, do not torment me. Here is a man that is, the text says, he's unclean. He has an unclean spirit. He is unholy. And his unholiness means that he is disordered. It means that things aren't fitting the way they're supposed to be. He is running around and he's gashing himself. He's living in the tombs. This man is as unclean, as unholy as it gets. If you were to take the picture of humanity and say, this is what a human ought to look like, this would be the opposite. Humans aren't supposed to be living in tombs and caves and running around and being chained up like animals. He's become more like an animal than he has a human. And he's so disordered. He's so out of sync with what a human is supposed to be, that he's even gashing himself and hurting himself. So he's become disfigured and misshapen. And this picture of this man is the picture of humanity completely. That we once were created to be well ordered, to be beautifully made in God's image. And things started getting out of order, and priorities started getting messed up, and we're fallen, and we have this sense of meaning, and we're still alive, but we're misshapen, and we're scarred, and we're ugly because we don't know how to order our lives. We don't know how to give the right weight to the right thing. And that produces even more problems. Problem on top of problem. The cycle just perpetuates itself until we get to this point. And he says, Jesus asked him in verse 9, "What is your name?" And he said to him, "My name is Legion, for we are many." And he began to implore him earnestly not to send them out of the country. And you remember that he sends them out in verse 13. Coming out, the unclean spirits entered the swine, and the herd rushed down the steep bank into the sea. They're drowned. These unclean spirits going to these unclean animals. Because that's really what that man was at that point, was just a completely unholy, unclean creature. But notice what it says after that had happened. Jesus, they run away and report it. And down in verse 15, they came to Jesus and observed the man who had been demon-possessed, sitting down, clothed, and in his right mind, the very man who had had the legion, and they became frightened. That's what God can do for us through holiness. If we will order our lives the way God has ordered them, then we will go from being naked and gashing ourselves and dead in these tombs to being clothed, ordered in our right minds. This is a miracle that's supposed to teach us what it looks like when we come in contact with the holiness of Jesus. And the only way to do that is to start appreciating what is more important and what is where the proper grades go. And I hope as we go throughout this week that we will see some of those things. As you meditate on those things, you will start to evaluate and reevaluate things as you see them presented in the Bible. Not simply in our time together, but in your own time with God's Word. Trying to be wise and discerning where God has placed His emphases on different things. If you're not a Christian tonight, I'm going to ask you and invite you to be baptized. You can put off the old man of sin, the man that is unclean in his spirit, and God will clothe you and put you in your right mind. Transform the way you think. You can have that purpose and meaning that God has given to us, that we have not earned, that we have not deserved, but He has blessed us with. If you are a Christian and you have maybe had sin in your life that was due to a disordering of things, maybe you've put the wrong weight on the wrong thing and that's led to sin in your life and that's harmed other people. And we want you to be able to repent, and we want to be able to pray for you and to restore you if that be your need. If there's anything we can do, won't you come while we stand and while we sing?
Hear you not the invitation of repentance to meet thy God. Get a soul, glory, the morning eager, for delights of the sins to Christ to be done. Oh, how sad it is. Oh, prepare to meet thy God.
Supper, would you please raise your hand?